DGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 500, recorded on April 19th, 2018.
To the 500th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 333rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes gaming flashback.
Speaking
of flashbacks...
Flashback Paul.
Yay! Hi, guys.
Welcome to the show, Paul. Welcome back to the show.
Welcome back, yeah.
Yeah, life has been interesting since I've been here last. We hit 500 episodes. Go you.
Derek, Derek Nolan left a message. He wasn't actually on the podcast. He was a podcast partner with Derek Schammer, who was the original podcast. And they did their own podcast. But you know what? He's associated enough with the show. Jordan can't make it because he's doing family things and he's away.
Aww. Okay. But good for them. It's always nice to hear in that people are doing well.
Well, here's the thing about... Jordan, I'm sort of glad he couldn't make it because the last time he did, he had to show us his foot stigmata, and that was just too much.
Oh,
I managed not to look at that.
Neither did I. I knew
his
I
gross,
was going
His gross foot killed the episode, if I remember right.
Oh, yeah. Using video, yeah, it just killed the episode. It will kill the connection. We have to reconnect again. But, yeah, I was like...
Fair enough.
So...
I wasn't here. I can't speak to it.
Well... Paul, instead of what you were playing, what have you been doing aside from teaching?
Let's see. I teach. I consult for my escape room company, partlywicked.com.
Oh, wait. Time out. So for those of you paid attention last time, Paul is a self-professed escape room addict. How many did you do
in
a month?
Oh, my God. It depends on what month.
When
last
you were first
year,
doing it.
Year alone we did last year alone 85 of them. We're in contention for room of the year.
No, but you personally, before now, this is something new. So now you're not only playing them, you're running them?
I'm designing them. I'm consulting with some venues, some companies, which, you know, want to stand apart from, from their competition. And I design escape rooms.
Wow. So
awesome.
Thank you.
You know, actually, that reminds me, I've been trying to get into Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, which is not an escape room, but it's sort of like, you know, you have a bomb and people talk, people have to walk you through disarming.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough. Right. That's a cooperative game with special roles.
Yeah. In other words, they can't see your screen. And actually, I printed out the entire notebook, so you don't have to look through a PDF file. So,
fair enough.
What have you been playing?
I have no idea what that had. Oh, what we're playing. Oh, I've been playing Shop Heroes for iOS and Facebook. Man, am I addicted. It's an awesome crafting game. Shop Heroes. It is an awesome crafting game.
Crafting what? Is it crafting clothes?
Weapons, armor.
Oh, okay.
That sort of thing.
Right. I've been doing a lot of Cooking Dash, right. I was about to say Dining, but Diner Dash was the actually original game. But it's cool. What have you been playing, TJ?
I have been playing the holy hell out of Radical Heights.
Oh, which, okay. So that's, by the way, for those who don't know, Radical Heights is the semi-sequel spiritual successor of Lawbreakers.
It really has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, same company, though.
The only connective tissue is that Boss Key, the same company, is handling it. I haven't really gotten into Battle Royale games that much. I've dabbled in Fortnite. I've dabbled in PUBG. Radical Heights really makes me happy because it's like straight up all the 80s game shows wrapped up into a Battle Royale theme.
You know,
and And the part of me that grew up watching American Gladiators, Double Dare, Nickelodeon Guts, Treasures of the Hidden Temple, all of those gimmicks just make me smile and laugh my ass off when I like hear the cheesy music and the announcers and everything all over this stuff.
You know what the one problem I heard about that is, and this is from my Rebel FM, is that, well, yeah, it's great for the Smash TV sort of thing. But if they're going to do that, why don't they make the guns a little less realistic and more fantastic?
I agree. And my answer to that would be it's super early access and they have time to change.
Speaking of shows like Legends of the Hidden Temple and Double Dare, etc., it has occurred to me that this was a you know, for anyone who is not familiar, these are TV game shows where the whole gimmick is that something really awesome happens at the end. Like on Double Dare, they have to go through the obstacle course, and Legends of the Hidden Temple, they have to run through the temple in order to get the treasure.
Which is it the one that you get slimed in?
Double Dare.
Yeah, that would do it. It occurs to me, by the way, that escape rooms are like those game shows, but for adult and only the awesome part at the end.
I've done a couple escape rooms, and I wish they were that flashy.
Escape rooms are amazing.
I like the puzzle solving mechanics, and I like the story that goes with them. I've actually had a chance to do some escape rooms since we last talked, Paul, and I really enjoy them.
They are so much fun.
But if there was an 80s game show themed escape room, God, I would die.
There is a I don't know where it is, but there's like this hotel that has each room is a game board. Like there's Clue, there's Scrabble.
That's here in Orlando.
Yeah, that is cool. I want to go there.
Awesome. Wait, you gotta rent the whole thing though, and it sleeps like 30 people. So,
of the Parker Brothers board games, which do you most identify with? First, Scott, which one?
Clue.
Paul.
Parker Brothers only. Hold on, I'm gonna have to.
Yeah, Clue, Monopoly, whatever. Sorry, I mean it doesn't have to be.
All board games.
Well, all the old, you know, family board games like Life and Clue and
I'm going to have to go with Life only because from my personal experience, I know that they have updated that game every 3 or 4 years to stay current. So I often feel like I am a prisoner out of time.
DJ?
I would like to. Yeah, go ahead.
You want to, wait, Scott, you want to change your answer then?
I was thinking about saying Stratego, but I wanted to make sure that
Stratego's
was possible.
Stratego's fine. Yeah, Stratego.
Okay. Yeah, I love that. I loved playing it as a kid. Yeah. You have these armies, and you had to plot them out and everything.
I love destroying the other person's bombs. Like, aha, it's a bomb. Mm-hmm. Now guess what? I'm a miner. Your bomb, go bye-bye.
Yeah.
I was thinking about Don't Wake Daddy, but that might be too far, so I'm just going to go with Trouble.
Okay. I was about to say, I was going to guess you're Trouble or Sorry.
Yeah, Trouble all the way.
I'm gonna go with Mousetrap.
Oh my god, that thing never worked right.
It worked right.
It is like Jonah, 15 minutes of setup for just like 2 seconds of disappointment.
Oh, it's nice to see I've left the show in some good hands.
Oh man. Anyways,
usually I'm the one poking fun at Jonah. Geez.
Damn. Well, here's the thing. They don't. It's your presence that's inspiring them.
Fair enough.
They don't. You're inspiring them. It's like your presence is giving them permission. It's like, yes, it's Paul's here. You can now fire on him. Go ahead. See, this is why everybody waits for the Paul episode so that they can have this.
Better banter.
Scott, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Monster Hunter and feeling kind of not into it anymore. I got a little bit frustrated with it and I've kind of put it on hold, but it's just I'm just not feeling it. I mean, there's a lot of people that just love this game that are obsessed with it. And it just feels like you're fighting one boss after another, and the story could be told better, because there was a scene where this elf shows up, and my partner is like, oh my god, is that who I think it is? And I'm like, I have no clue who this is. Why don't they tell me their name? And they just act all mysterious and then wander off, and I'm like, okay. So it just, I'm just not feeling the obsession that other people are. So I'm definitely not going to be calling this game of the year when we get to that part. So I'm going to look for a different game.
You know, actually, TJ. Actually, TJ, remember that game you told me about, Dauntless? Well, I played it at PAX East. And I should have played one of the harder creatures because I played on one of the easier creatures. And the controls are fine. It's sort of like, yeah, but, you know, there has to be some sort of better challenge than this. You know, and I'm guessing that there are harder creatures, so we'll see. So somewhere between Monster Hunter and Dauntless is where the sweet spot is for that kind of game.
Yeah, Dauntless has a lot of different creatures, and they're kind of like Bloodborne, Dark Souls-esque things where they have different phases and they get harder.
I played a bird thing, like a harpy.
Yeah, that was one of the easier ones. There are definitely harder ones, and definitely some that take a little bit more strategy to get through.
Okay. Because here's the thing, I shouldn't have played one of the easier ones because basically it was just me, whack, 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 get out of the way, whack, 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 get out of the way.
And the unfortunate factor behind games like those is that, like, Monster Hunter has never had a very good story. It has all the complexity of a porno.
Complexity?
Yes,
narrative complexity.
TJ, you've been watching the wrong kind of pornos.
I'm talking about narrative complexity, that's right.
Oh, I see. Oh, I thought you said that it was actually comparative. You know, the thing about it is that one thing that I didn't see from Dauntless, and I hope they have, is the sort of, like, tracking that you have to do. You know, the actual tracking. Like, at least in Monster Hunter, you have to do a lot of – it's like playing Cabela's Monster Hunter, right? You know, you have to do a lot of things. I guess for the demo, they just had to get straight to the action, so you really couldn't invest in, you know – oh, here's
that's
some
the thing.
Marks.
That's the thing, is that those games have built their legacies not really on the story, yes, on the monsters, but mostly on the community and, like, getting people to work together on that stuff. Like, it's really not a fun thing to go through. I mean, it is to a certain extent. I enjoy Monster
Hunter
World.
Why isn't there a Monster Hunter MMO? I mean, that would make more sense than an actual game.
Because it pretty much is, yeah. It's an MMO already, sort of in the way that Destiny is, where you can just, like, team up. People are, like, constantly in the world with you, and you can choose to team up with them or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I got invites to join people on their match. It's like, I'm trying to learn the game. Don't invite me.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's the thing about it, though, is that it's really never been its own, like, a mind-blowing story or anything. It's mostly just boss fights and getting together with your buddies and harvesting critters.
As for me, since we last talked, I played the entirety of South Park: The Fractured Butthole.
Oh, good for you.
And I finished that game as well.
I really liked it. I see, here's the thing. I wasn't that big a fan of the Stick of
Truth. I heard that about you.
Thank you. I'm the one who gives the fractured buttholes. Anyways, but you know, the story really sucked me in, even though, and the thing is that, you know, for all the sheen they put on South Park, right, they do a lot of gross out humor and the farting and all that stuff. There's actually a story there about something the story is really about something else rather than these four kids, oh, not four kids, this kid who's in South Park for the first time. And also the gameplay was really good. It was sort of like, here's the thing what I don't like about RPGs is that you have to hunt for everything. This game, it's sort of like, yeah, we're not going to tell you at first, but if you're having it's over there. You don't have to, you know, what's funny is that one of the things is where you have to do a Flappy Bird thing. And if you keep crashing, instead of three lives, it gives you 25 lives and says, yeah, you're going to pass this whether you like it or not. I was tempted to see what would happen if I failed 25 times, just to see what the game would say, but I wanted to get it over with.
Yeah, I love that part where he's making fun of Kanye West's game. I don't know if you ever finished it or not, but they made fun of it in that. That was funny.
Yeah. But I also love the... Every time Mitch Connor is involved, it's sort of like,
oh my God,
mind screw.
Yeah.
Like, what I love is when you're fighting either him or you're fighting Cartman... He says, oh, by the way, I'm changing the rules on you.
Yeah, the thing about Cartman is he's like Ben Linus from Lost. He's going to keep lying to you and lying, and he'll lie again.
Even the actual matches, he'll say, oh, by the way, it didn't hurt me, but it affected you. You know, sort of like cheating. Until, of course, Timmy says, okay, that's it. I call no cheating anymore.
Yeah, this is bullshit.
And spoiler, when you have the two Mitch Connors arguing, it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah, that was hilarious, yes.
But like I said, you know, the moments, like when you, the three times in which you have to eat dinner and you hear your parents fighting, and it's such a quiet, sad moment because he's there playing with his food a little bit before eating a little bit before going to sleep. It is really touching.
Yeah.
It is really sad. And, you know, like I said, I'm not a South Park fan, but I really like the story in the game. So I plan to pick – this is Gamefly. I plan to pick it up again because I know that if you want to, you can play in the hardest difficulty and you have to play as a black kid and he has all this racism aimed at him, which makes the game a lot harder to play because, you know, it's a bit major part of it. So, you know, there's a lot of social statements in the game, and that's one of the final ones if you want to play at the hardest level.
Yeah, I think you get an achievement, too.
Yeah, you get an achievement. Anyways, TJ, have we asked what you were playing?
Yeah, Radical Heights.
Oh, right. Okay. So, anyways, we're going to move on to the gaming flashback. TJ, go ahead.
Gaming flashback, World of Goo. World of Goo is a puzzle video game developed and published by independent game developer 2D Boy. A team based in San Francisco, consisting only of former Electronics Arts employees Kyle Gabler and Ron Carmel. The game's development was started in August 2006 as a freeware prototype called Tower of Goo on the Experimental Gameplay Project. The game was first released on Microsoft Windows and Wii platforms on October 13, 2008, with releases on Nintendo Switch, Mac OS X, Linux, and various mobile devices following in subsequent years. The game is built around the idea of creating large structures using balls of goo. The game is divided into five chapters, each containing several levels. Each level has its own graphic and musical theme, giving it a unique atmosphere. There is also a bonus metagame called World of Goo Corporation, where the objective is to build the highest tower using goo balls, which the player collected through the course of the game. Players from all over the world can compete, as the height of the tower and number of goo balls used are being constantly uploaded to the 2D Boy server. The main objective of the game is to get a requisite number of goo balls to a pipe designed to represent the exit The main objective of the game is to get a requisite number of goo balls to a pipe designed to represent the exit. In order to do so, the player must use the goo balls to construct bridges, towers, and other structures to overcome gravity and various terrain difficulties such as chasms, hikes, hills, spikes, windmills, or cliffs. There are several types of goo balls in the game, each of which has unique properties. The player must exploit combinations of these goo balls in order to complete each level. Extra goos recovered in the pipe are pumped through to the world of Goo Corporation, a sandbox area where the objective is to compete with other players worldwide by building the tallest tower possible. Players can also try to achieve the obsessive completion distinction flag for each level by completing the level under more stringent criteria, such as collecting a larger number of goo balls, finishing under a set amount of time, or using as few moves as possible. 2D Boy decided against placing digital rights management, or DRM, protection on PC versions, stating that DRM is a futile attempt to prevent piracy, and it's expensive.
It's also a futile attempt to have privacy anymore on the internet.
Yeah. Every game for which there is demand will be cracked and find its way onto the scene, so why waste time and money trying to prevent the inevitable? 2D Boy later reported that between 1 in 5 and 1 in 10 copies of the PC versions had been legitimately purchased.
That's sad. By the way, I also remember how I got my copy of World of Goo was that they had this thing in which you could pay what you want. You could pay anything from a dollar on up. And one of the heartwarming things was that the average amount paid was like $15, which meant people were willing to pay the normal price for it, even though they could have just gave them a buck.
That is nice. I liked playing that game on the Wii, and it was interesting to use the 3D remote to place your slime balls or goo balls and try to solve the puzzles, and that was a very good game. It I think it was kind of innovative because I don't think there was any game quite like that before.
So there was, but not like. See, here's the thing about it is that there were games that were like that, but this one used actual physics because that's what the main game was trying to, you know. Because if you played the game, you know, one of the main problems is that as you built it, your tower, because of physics, start to slough over. It's sort of like, no, stop! Yeah. Straighten out! Or it wouldn't stretch to the way you wanted it. And at some point, I just couldn't pass the first level. It was that frustrating. I mean, I just re-downloaded it, so I'm going to try again and see if I can actually get to the second level. But it also was a very interesting-looking game. It was almost monochromatic in black and white. I mean, there was splashes of color here and there, but basically it was just strings of goo that looked like black snot.
Yeah, pretty gross, but it was a lot of fun.
Delightful.
Now, the thing is, I didn't expect we were going to be saying goo balls so many times in this episode.
That was a lot of goo balls.
Yeah, just saying goo balls.
Goobles.
Did you play it, TJ or Paul?
I have not gotten that far in my games list. The problem is that the longer my games to play list continues, the more games get added. So it kind of pushes the older games towards the bottom.
Yeah.
I just did a Humble Bundle and I haven't downloaded some of those games because I know that I'm not going to be able to play them for a while now. I mean, I've just been doing Mini Metro and Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes.
I even saw some games go for free, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not clicking because I'm never going to play you.
I mean, I will say this. On the Xbox Live Arcade, I do download the games and then stop the download just to have them when I want them, you know? Oh, by the way, I started playing Assassin's Creed Syndicate because it's free on Xbox Live, and I've been spoiled by Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor and War because playing Syndicate, it feels a little slick and slippery. Monolith really nailed down the Assassin's Creed style gameplay even better than Ubisoft did.
I thought you liked it slick and slippery, Jonah.
No, that's for other things.
Gross!
How about you, TJ? Have you played World of Goo?
No, but I actually was looking through Switch and I didn't see this game on there. If I'd known about it, I probably would have picked it up for my last business trip. It sounds interesting.
It was on. Oh, it is on Switch. So I don't know what to say because I know it was the big thing that I was on Wii for a while.
It might be like way back there in the catalog.
Well, it is a 10-year-old game, so.
Yeah.
Anyways, so we're going to move on to game news, and I will have to preface this by saying that TJ is involved with Twin Galaxies, even though he's not a part of the scoring table. He's part of something else with Twin Galaxies. He's part of the esports thing.
Yeah, I got to be a little careful about what I say about this one.
But it is.
I mean, you could always decline to comment.
Indeed.
Well, I'm pretty sure he wants to though. I mean, he did comment on other stuff dealing with Twin Galaxies and the scores, but this is something sort of major, and we'll get right into it right now. King of Kong star stripped of high scores, banned from competition, and this comes to us from Variety. Famed high score gamer Billy Mitchell, best known for his role in the King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters documentary, was officially stripped of his Donkey Kong and other video game high scores and banned from submitting scores to the world's largest tracker of video game world records following the decision that he cheated, Twin Galaxies announced today. With this ruling, Twin Galaxies can no longer recognize Billy Mitchell as the first million-point Donkey Kong record holder, the group wrote in its announcement. According to our findings, Steve Wiebe would be the official first million-point holder. The decision comes months after research by the administrators of Twin Galaxies, which tracks world gaming records and helps the Guinness Book of World Records validate gaming scores, according to a statement released by the group Thursday morning. By the way, I have to say, Twin Galaxies was basically self-appointed in the 80s to do this, to do the video game records, because no one else wanted to. You know, it's sort of right. Like Twin Galaxies, we'll do it. And no one said, no, we're not, because at the time, you know, in the 80s, they were sort of controversial. I mean, I remember this right-wing Christian group who demanded that all Pac-Man machines be destroyed.
Oh, the right wing.
Mm-hmm. Well, they happen to be right wing, but it's just weird. Anyways, the group writes in a statement released today that Billy Mitchell's famous Donkey Kong score of 1,047,200 was not achieved on an arcade machine, a requirement for Twin Galaxies and Guinness, but rather through the use of emulation software.
And let me make an important distinction here as the senior editor of Twin Galaxies. Twin Galaxies has at no point said that Billy Mitchell cheated. We will not use that word. That is not what we said. What we did say was that the videotape supposedly holding his million point record from multiple sources of holding on to the same copy was proven through extensive testing that it would be likely impossible for him to have accomplished that record only on an arcade machine, and the evidence that we have points to the fact that MAME was most likely used in the tapes that were present.
I love MAME. MAME is my
What's
best
MAME?
Friend. MAME
is an emulation.
Multi-arcade something emulator. I've got the entire. But yeah, I mean, MAME is the way I used to play all the arcade games long after I started spending quarters, like Mr. Do, Zookeeper. I had 300 MAME ROMs. And yeah, I know.
Okay, Jonah, there's more copy.
What? Yeah.
There's more copy, Jonah, before we get tangentialized.
Well, here's the problem, is that here he explained, they meticulously tested and investigated this dispute case. So what they did was they took the video and they looked at it with a fine-tooth comb and decided, you know what, this could not have been done on an arcade machine. It had to have been done with MAME. Based on the complete body of evidence presented in the official dispute thread, Twin Galaxies administrative staff has unanimously decided to remove all of Billy Mitchell's scores, as well as ban him from participating in our competitive leaderboards, which I find the most interesting part of that. We have noted Guinness World Records of our decision. So Billy Mitchell, if you ever saw the King of Kong, of his full quarters, he's the guy with the long hair and the beard and mustache. And I don't feel bad for Billy Mitchell, because it seems to me he really didn't care about the record. He was so into playing a villain on that documentary. He is not the bad guy that you see in the documentary. He was playing it up, and he got what he wanted. You know, screw record holder, he got noticed. And he, you know, as a matter of fact, if you saw Pixels, Peter Dinklage basically played a 4-foot version of him.
Mm-hmm. And he tried to sue the regular show a while back for using a creative likeness of him.
Well, guess what?
There's a point when you become a public figure where you no longer are protected by those laws.
And he decided to become one too. I mean, he parlayed that image in the King of Kong to bring attention to himself. So guess what? You just lost your right of privacy.
But yeah, essentially what it boils down to is that when it comes to an arcade machine of Donkey Kong and the MAME emulation of Donkey Kong, everybody knows what the barrel board is, the one where you climb up ladders and jump over barrels and get the hammer and everything.
Like the main Donkey Kong board.
The first board,
yes.
Yeah.
There is a distinct difference between the way that the girders that you walk on load in Donkey Kong, the arcade machine, and Donkey Kong on MAME. Somebody took notice of that in the tape. And so the major part of the testing in the case was determining if there was, under any circumstance, by extensive amount of testing under all sorts of different settings, any possibility that an arcade version of Donkey Kong could load the level in the same way.
So here's a few questions. One, okay, so why did they ban all of his records? So you're not saying he cheated, right? But if you're banning him permanently, it sort of says to me, you know, there's more to this that means the eye, you know? And you don't have to answer DJ.
my personal speculation would be that it just costs too much time, money, energy, and other resources to validate these things to make it worth allowing him to continue to compete.
Well, even if you couldn't, you have to do it on an arcade machine, you know? And I guess telling him, well, you know what? It would be unfair to ask him to go in front of a Donkey Kong machine and just play it, because even the best players aren't going to have their best days every time. So how many times are you going to ask him to play the arcade cabinet? So you can't really do that, you know?
The question that I want to answer is, who cares? Donkey Kong is like 40 years old.
You'd be shocked.
It's like any other world record. You know, you have no many longest fingernails.
And you speak from experience.
No,
I do.
I'm not in the world. I'm not in the Guinness Book of World Records, Paul.
I'm just saying.
It's like people have fought over most fish held in one's mouth or something, you know, one of those stupid college things, like how many people inside a phone booth. You know, world records are quote-unquote serious business. Now, you can say who cares, but to a lot of people, this – and now, video games, it really matters.
There's also the fact that Billy Mitchell was in of himself an incredibly polarizing figure. Is an incredibly polarizing figure, I should say. There's a lot of people that would be willing to credit him as having brought enough attention to the arcade industry as to create sort of the first esports scene.
When did he do this score? Because I never heard of him until this article.
Earlier than 2007, because that was the whole point of the documentary, was all about how he felt cheated for not getting the recognition
Steve
or something
Wiebe
like
or
that.
Billy Mitchell. Because Steve Wiebe was the one who was the quote-unquote underdog
in
that documentary. The supposed villain of the documentary.
But like I said, Billy Mitchell set himself up to be a villain on purpose. He deliberately made himself out to be this mustache-twirling villain, which he really isn't. He's wealthy. That's about it. That's the only...
Look, the entire thing's a publicity stunt,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
As is the documentary that claims that E.T. was buried in the desert, right? People just trying... Yeah, everyone's just trying to make a buck. Everyone's just trying to keep food on their table.
Billy Mitchell already
won. And this is how they're choosing to do it.
Yeah, Billy Mitchell already won. Donkey Kong record or not, you know, he's now famous for being Billy Mitchell and not being a world record holder in a video game.
Billy Mitchell the jerk.
Well, that's his character. Like I said, he's not that bad a guy in person. He's a nice guy.
Well, nobody is.
But
that's
he
the thing,
likes
right?
To play
nobody's
himself
ever
as
really...
a jerk. He wanted to be, it was like he was in a wrestling match and he was the heel.
Right, and it's, you know, it's something that I used to say on this show occasionally. You know, the character in the entertainment is much different than the Paul, you know, that I am in real life.
Let me ask you a
question.
And
when you're doing something, you know, to sell or in otherwise promote a product, it's you take it with a grain of salt, right? The same way that Roseanne Barr is not the same as the character she plays on TV, even though the character has the same name.
I mean, had the King of Kong been anywhere near interesting if Billy Mitchell had been this really nice guy who was just saying, well, you know, you can say that, but I hold the record. You know, it wouldn't have been nowhere near interesting unless he had been evil with this pneumatic blonde at his side. This big busted blonde girl. And he's like, yeah, I'm the rich guy. And guess what? I own it. And Steve Wiebe is not. And you're just being a prick in the documentary. It was a lot more interesting.
Well, you're assuming... You're assuming that I cared about it in the first place.
Well, people do care.
No, I mean cared about watching the movie. I watched it and I was like, oh my God, this is the world's biggest waste of my time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm just saying, would you have been more bored if he was just this boring nice guy? Actually, you know, well...
No, I understand what you're trying to say, right? That it is... conflict that you find the story, right? Because I just said that like a minute ago.
Yeah.
But I didn't, as little as I cared, you're right, I probably would have cared less. But I mean, at this point, we're talking about splitting an atom my not caringness.
What was the last documentary that you really enjoyed?
I don't know.
Maybe you don't
like
documentaries.
I would say Castles of England for me. Since you asked, I said Castles of England for me.
Okay.
That's the last documentary.
Yeah, I find most documentaries to be horribly slanted. Because they're still entertainment products.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you'd like the documentary on suffragists. Probably not.
Oh, I know it. I know which one is my favorite. It's This is Spinal Tap.
That's a mockumentary.
It's real to me.
You know, the funny thing is that those the guys have to break out their characters every so often, so they don't lose the rights to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you have these really ancient looking guys, and they look like melted candles now when they do their songs.
Hey guys, it's Derek D. Smooth Nolan, co-founder of Tool to Play and host of the wildly popular podcast /vidcast Still Got Game. I remember when the TD Gaming podcast started 11 years ago. Our editor-in-chief, Derek Code Monkey Schomer, started up as an accompaniment to his own website. Tech Diversions. It was an awesome show. I remember when Jonah came on board. I remember when Code Monkey stopped doing it. But I'm pretty sure Jonah's done almost 300 episodes since then. So huge congrats on episode 500. And here's to 500 more, Jonah. Good job.
Anyways, moving on to the next item. Crow Team and Devolver promise a quote-unquote brutally bigger new Serious Sam. This comes to us from Polygon. Developer Crow Team is bringing back Serious Sam, the shooter franchise it's been working on since 2001 for another run. The studio and publisher Devolver Digital today teased Serious Sam 4 Planet Badass, a Serious Sam, quote-unquote, on a brutally bigger scale in the new trailer. The trailer shows Serious Sam riding a chopper through a pastoral setting, scattered with fauna and later scores of headless kamikaze bombers. How can you not have a Serious Sam game without the headless kamikaze bombers who scream at you? Even though they have no heads, they're screaming. Hinting at Planet Badass's more expansive new direction. On the game's Steam page, Crow Team promises, quote, the world-renowned signature Serious Sam gameplay on a brutally bigger scale and not a single desert level, good, which is interesting. Exactly what this means for Serious Sam, we'll have to wait for this year's E3. Devolver and Crow Team plan to reveal more at this year's show, which takes place on June 12th to the 14th in Los Angeles. I will say right away that it's not going to be on site. It's not going to be in E3. They'll probably have their little thing in the parking lot, as they always do. We'll talk about that in a second. Serious Sam, the first encounter, was kicked off the franchise in 2001. Crow Team has followed that game with sequels, HD remakes, and VR versions of the games. The studio veered away from Serious Sam 2014 with its first-person puzzle game, The Talos Principle, which I have not played. So one thing you have to know about Serious Sam, it is one of those quote-unquote throwbacks, like Painkiller, in which there's no story. You just have enemies running at you, and you have to shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
Often with a great sense of
humor. Now, that sounds delightful.
It is, because it's just mindless fun, and they really stress the fun because all the enemies are ridiculous.
I judge you.
Like those. Here's the thing. Those headless kamikaze bombers don't have hands. They have bombs, and they scream when they're running towards you, even though they don't have mouths because they don't have a head. And it is just the best way to describe Serious Sam is ludicrous.
Is this going to be one of those $50, $60 games?
No. Usually the Serious Sam games are like $30.
Yeah, it still feels like too much.
I mean, it's a straight-up Duke Nukem-style shooter.
Yeah.
Except with no context and no misogyny either.
My favorite...
Well, then what's the point?
You're shooting people with bombs for hands. What more do you need?
My favorite thing about Serious Sam ever was Serious Sam 3. They put on the best and most notable piracy protection of all time.
Oh, yeah, the pink scorpion?
Yes. Or no, one particular pink scorpion.
Yeah.
After the first battle, basically a centaur scorpion monster that screams all the time will chase you down and chase you throughout the entire game, and you cannot kill it.
You know, the funniest thing is that people actually have preferred the pirated version of the game just simply to see how long they could last against this gigantic screaming scorpion monster.
In design circles, we call that emergent gameplay.
Yeah. Yes, there are.
So you're actually playing a different game. You're playing a weird demo.
You're playing weird piracy protection challenge mode.
Well, here's the thing. You know, if you really like the game, then it's actually a demo. And then eventually you're going to say, you know what, I want to buy the main game at some point. That reminds me of the piracy protection for Batman Arkham Asylum, in which he can't glide.
Oh, that.
At a certain point in the game where you're required to glide, you know, he'll just fall and die, you know. And one person actually complained, you know, I can't open my eyes. This is not a defect of the game. It's a defect of your morals.
Of course it is.
So anyway. But yeah, now TJ, you're going to E3 again, right? So we know what's going to happen. They're going to be off the site in their own little tent in the parking lot, because ESA and Devolver Digital have this massive feud with each other. But you know, now that I think about it, they're actually ahead of the curve, because everybody else is no longer on the floor either. EA is not on the floor. I don't think Activision is going to be on the floor. They're going to have all these little venues around E3.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's fun because for those of you who remember last year, we recorded an episode at Devolver Digital, and TJ loved it because he was also able to chug back a few beers while doing the episode.
Oh, yeah, they had plenty of beer on site. It was nice.
I mean, it's a kind of a sign of the times, right? E3 started as an exclusive industry event in which game companies were showing store buyers, like, you know, for Best Buy or Toys R Us or whoever, what was going to be available for the Christmas shopping season, right? There's a lot, this is when journalists were courted. And now with the internet, with the speed of communication, we don't really need it anymore.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. The first time I did Civilization at E3, I think it was Civ 4, Dennis Shirk came out. And he would walk us through the game. You know, he'd say, okay, this is what we're doing here, and this is the addition we're making here, and, you know, and all that stuff, right? Come Civilization 5, we went into a room, they showed us a 10-minute trailer, and we walked out. And that trailer was shown 2 weeks later. It was like, I didn't even need to be there.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I don't bother going to, like, San Diego Comic-Con or anything. It's like, these marketing events are just, like, a huge waste of time and money.
It feels kind of indicative of the quality between 4 and 5. It just, you know, they show you just the trailer. It doesn't even really walk you through the game. It's like they almost didn't even really care that much.
Well, it isn't that. It's just that, you know, well, here's the thing. They walked me through the Beyond Earth, and that didn't turn out great either. Mm. It's just that, you know, they no longer need to show us anything. I think they did – actually, it wasn't Civ 5. It was Civ 6 that they showed me the 10-minute trailer for. It's like I didn't need to be there. I would just – I could have just posted a YouTube video.
I mean
– this is what I saw.
Same thing at, you know, The Sims 4 when we went, Jonah?
The Sims – yeah, we went to see The Sims 4. Here's the thing. At least they were talking to us.
That's true.
She was so excited, you know. I was sort of excited, but I was saying, yeah, but how is this different from Sim 3? You know. I dragged Paul because I wanted him to have someone to be with me.
Yeah.
They got t-shirts at least.
Throw myself on that grenade.
Yeah. Actually, the last time I was at E3, I stood in line with him for the whatever tchotchke it was that he was getting for the Wii.
Nope, for Disney's Lego? Infinity.
Oh, Disney Infinity, right. Yeah, it was sort of sad with Disney's Infinity.
But
actually, it's sort of sad with Lego Dimensions because they canceled that.
I can't go there. I can't. Yeah, I mean,
we never discussed this with Paul, actually, you know, about Lego Dimensions stopping. It's I'm disappointed. I didn't buy it.
It's a real shame.
At some point, I was probably going to get it.
It's a real shame. It was the entire Toys to Life genre, you know, was really interesting and innovative up until, you know, companies decided to not listen to what characters their audience wanted. You know, they decided to tell the audience what characters they wanted. And that's not how you're going to succeed in business over the long run, right? Because they...
Ironically, you know, it's Spyro is still doing it. Skylanders is still doing it because people don't know what they want with that one. It's like, yeah, we have these Spyro characters. People are like, okay...
And
but it's still going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, they decided to not release anything for a while to let the big, let the heavy hitters get the hell out of their space because they don't know what the hell they're doing. But characters that are all exactly the same, it's not what the Infinity players wanted, right? Characters that are tied into the latest movie for Dimensions is not what their audience wanted. I also think they came out with far too many characters all at once.
It would have been interesting to see what they'd done with something like Coco. It would have been interesting what they did with that. Or Moana.
Nothing that product was going to do was going to make anything interesting.
For the simple fact that it was all just pieces of things, right? They didn't have core gameplay updates until it was too late.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, and Paul knows this because he's a developer. He was a game designer. You know what? It's not snap your fingers and it's there. You got to work. You know, you can't laze your way around it. This is like people will notice when you're being lazy, you know, and trying to maximize money.
Right, like good, you know, like good art doesn't save a bad game, right? That's essentially what the main problem with Infinity was, right? I said, you know, the characters were all the same. Well, the gameplay underneath, it was all the same, right? Mickey and Elsa both had, you know, ranged attacks. They both had the same jump height. It was just a different skin, essentially, to sell figures.
Yeah, I mean, people were thinking, well, they'll want the dolls more than they want the game. That's not, well, no.
Well, yeah,
because if they wanted the dolls, they'd buy dolls.
Right, if you're going to spend, you know, $15 to $30 a piece, they got to do something different.
Scott, TJ, you want to, I mean, you want to enjoy, jump in?
I will say, I enjoy, like, we're talking about games to life, right?
Yeah,
Toys to Life. I really enjoy the Amiibos and the Skylanders and stuff like that more than I've ever more than the other trend that's big, and that's Funko Pops. I really
how the Funko Pop.
Funko Pops.
Funko Pops are those little three-inch tall fat dolls that. Some of them actually are blanks. You can do whatever you want with them, but they're like characters.
They're like little bobbleheads with creepy, terrifying black eyes.
But they're not bobbleheads even. They're just these fat little troll dolls without the troll
and
hair.
They're every character you can imagine. Every character, like from Goonies to whatever.
Those things. I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah.
See, and like those things are everywhere, and quite frankly, they're kind of awful.
I hate them.
But here's the thing. They're cheap to make, and you don't have to worry about programming, because they're just dolls.
Yeah. I hate those things.
They're awful, though. They're like, yeah, they're cheap to make. Yeah, they're cheap to buy. They're also awful, and they're and in some cases, terrifying, because they all have blank eyes, like pits into the abyss that you just stare and they eat your soul. But
except for the fact that you remember Bethesda released characters from their games as a set that was at E3 that I still have somewhere.
There are certain characters that work as Funko Pops. Mostly they're creatures. Creatures work as Funko Pops. Guillermo del Toro works as a Funko Pop.
Guillermo del Toro himself, by the way, the director, not just the director himself as a giant Funko Pop.
Uh-huh. But I like Amiibo just because, like, you get that little bit of extra functionality out of it. Like, hey, cool, I can unlock something in a game with this. But also, it's a quality little figure that I can put on my desk and feel happy about.
Yeah, not for nothing.
But, you know, the Disney stuff was as well, though. It wasn't that the quality of the figures themselves were bad.
Yeah.
It's just that there was no point.
It's that there was no additional functionality in the game to warrant that price tag that they insisted on getting for it.
I've never bought one for more than $15, so I don't really have that issue.
But $15 is an insane amount of money for something that is only cosmetically different, right? Well, that's closer to $7.
Not if you look at the alternatives, which is Funko Pops, which are garbage, and Nendoroids, which are extremely stupid expensive.
I don't think that way. I don't think, well, you could. It's not like I say, well, you know, like it reminds me of Postcards from the Edge when Dorothy tells her daughter, you know, says, well, you could have had Lana Turner as a mother or Joan Crawford. And she says, these are my choices. Just because something else is awful doesn't mean you can't make something of yours quality and make it more involved.
I just think it's a good middle ground between like the biggest trends right now. Like, I love Nendoroids. I think they are awesome. I want Bathtub Geralt Nendoroid on my desk tomorrow, but I have to look into my wallet and decide whether or not I want that or I want to eat some night. So,
and, you know, I think that part of the problem for LEGO Dimensions was that they made a number of very silly business decisions, right? One of their flagship pieces for the line for the second year was tied into the female Ghostbusters movie. You know, how are you expecting to sell a certain number of units when it's attached to a movie that itself didn't do that well.
Well, that in the movie was basically just extremely polarizing as well.
It was Pixels for women. It was Pixels. It was the same exact film as Pixels. Anyways, but here's the thing, you know, and I feel bad about League of Dimensions because even though I didn't, because he had Scooby Doo for damn, for Garn's sake. How many times you can have Scooby Doo and the mystery, is it Mystery Van? No, oh, damn, I forgot
mystery
the name
machine.
Of it. Mystery Machine, right. Are you going to have that in a game that's quality, you know? And I like Legos. And the fact that you have, if you change the Legos, it changes the Legos in the game, you know, when you change the mode of movement.
No, that's a marketing point. You unlock it in the game first, and then it gives you the instructions to change your vehicle.
Yeah, but that's still, you know, that's giving you something to do.
Right.
I mean, unlike the Disney stuff, you know, it's like, oh, you just placed it on the thing.
Right.
That's it.
Absolutely. And because you're actually doing something about playing with the toys, right? That's one of the reasons why I liked it so much more. Unfortunately, like I said, the errors were in the lineup side. And essentially additionally the numbers went down for Dimensions in the second season because there were so many characters that did again exactly the same thing as characters from the first season.
I'm looking at the lineup for the franchises they featured and they are just kind of all over the place with this. It's they got like Ninjago and Portal 2 and Teen Titans Go, but then they also have like Knight Rider. Who was clamoring for the Knight Rider Lego Dimensions?
Me. Why not?
Even if you want to include that, right? I mean, great, diversify your target audience. Like, that's one of the things that I tell my students constantly. But did you notice how in the second season, like, it has, I don't know, like something like 40% was all like Cartoon Network properties, right? Teen Titans Go, Powerpuff Girls, some other thing. And it was like, wow.
Samurai Jack.
No, not Samurai Jack.
Samurai Jack wasn't there? I could have sworn.
Nah, he's not there.
Ed, and Eddie?
No. Adventure Time. That was the other one. But it's like
Adventure
it's
Time.
Like, wow, seriously? Like, that seemed like a lot to hedge your bets on. The same thing with the Steven Spielberg series, right? There was Goonies, there was E.T., and there was something else. It's like, wow, like you guys are really hedging your bets, and you're over-ordering pieces. Right? Because that was another thing that goes into the Toys to Life category was, you know, the production price of physical units. So you...
But who doesn't... I would love to see the Goonies and the Mystery Machine interact.
Well, then buy Lego Dimensions because it's all in there.
And you can get them until the next sale. Yeah, I was about to say, I'll wait for the sale in which I can get each of the things for a buck.
I would buy a Gremlins Lego Dimensions.
That was the other one, Gremlins. I mean, I have every world. Like, I don't have every figure. I have every world, but it started to feel like so much of the same that I have a lot of them still sitting there unopened.
I guess I'm the odd one out because I actually like the Funko Pop figures. I like having...
Oh, no, you can like them. I mean, they're like troll dolls, you know? It's just that if you're going to get into Funko Pop, just stick with one license, because if you try to do all of them, it's going to be like 1,000 different licenses.
I just like certain figures or certain characters, and I want Luke and Han Solo and Indiana Jones.
That's the entire point, though, isn't it? It's like you find the license that you'll like, and it says, okay, I want these guys, you know? Did you ever get – they also have the blank Funkos in which you can do whatever you want with them.
Yeah, I got one of them in a Loot Crate. We drew on that one. That was fun.
Oh, yeah, well – those Funko Pop things are always in loot crates because they're cheap and they just toss them right in.
Yeah.
Hey, TD Gaming Podcasters. It's former regular co-host Dan Quick checking in. Congratulations on turning 500 episodes strong. Dare I say, here's to 500 more. Game on!
SNK teasing its own classic compilation console. Another one. This is from Game Informer. SNK celebrating its 40th anniversary as a company this year by teasing new hardware invoking its classic lineup. The company, which has been around in various forms in the last 40 years and not always strictly a game developer, made the announcement in a tweet with the image above. The shrouded console is hard to make out, but it's clear to see an arcade stick poking out from the bottom, indicating the mini console might instead be a mini arcade cabinet. The Japanese tweet references SNK's long history of games, including King of Fighters, Metal Slug, Fatal Fury, and Samurai Showdown. So those series likely have representation on the new product. In addition, the company recently announced a game compilation for Switch for its 40th anniversary, so the company has you covered however you want to enrich yourself in its history. And this is another.
I know TJ's gonna giggle like a little girl.
I'm smiling over. I'm smiling over here. SNK arcades are where I cut my teeth when I was getting into everything. So it's.
And remember, Arc System Works comes from SNK.
Yes. Daisuke Shuatari, one of his first projects was The Last Blade, which is one of the best fighters in SNK's history. But yeah, there's so many good SNK games, not just the fighters, like Samurai Showdown, King of Fighters, and Last Blade, but like Metal Slug. Metal Slug is just so fun. And I hope they put Three Count Bad on there, which is like the best wrestling arcade game of all time.
Well, I love Neo Geo Mr. Do, so. Actually, it's Mr. Do Neo Geo, but still, you know, that was a fun game. So was Baseball Stars.
Oh, yeah.
Neo Geo as well.
Baseball!
So, you know, and I always hear a lot of people talking a lot about Samurai Showdown, although everybody has to admit that Samurai Showdown had some of the worst Japanese to English translations ever in any video game.
I posted something.
It was even worse than Set Us Up the Bomb, All Your Base Belong to Us. It was really bad.
I posted something from Samurai Showdown 2 recently. It was a victory line from one of the characters. God, where was it? It was something like... Oh, I found it. Hold on. It's a good... there it is.
Quick.
Don't be hateful each other. Love is the best strength.
I want to put that on a t-shirt. with a no sign over Donald Trump.
I mean, that's just good. That's just good advice for your everyday. That's just good, wholesome advice for your everyday life, coming from this giant bald man with a flaming fist on his arm.
Yes, the Dalai Lama really kicks ass. So
don't be hateful each other, or he'll punch you so hard that your face explodes.
So, Paul Scott, have you played any SNK games?
No,
I was just trying to think of one.
Same here.
You ever play with the Neo Geo?
I did play a Neo Geo when I was a kid, and I thought the whole thing was overrated, and I had no interest in continuing to play those games.
You're overrated.
Okay, well, those are SNK.
Your face is overrated.
You know that one of the things is you can see this coming because if you go to the PlayStation Store, Xbox Live Marketplace, they've been releasing SNK games after SNK games after SNK games, the Neo Geo versions. So you can see this was something they were planning on and judging how much people wanted it. And on the Xbox Live Marketplace side, you know, all the reviews are like, oh yes, we love this, you know, give us more, you know? So let me ask you a question. Was it King of Fighters that you cut your teeth on, really?
Fatal Fury, which was a predecessor to King of Fighters. Fatal Fury was essentially SNK's answer to Street Fighter.
You know, the thing is with King of Fighters is that you'll find people who will rate each and every one, and there's like a billion of them.
Yeah, I mean, they've been doing them since 96, and I think they're up to the latest one is King of Fighters 14.
14. Okay, so we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Nintendo overhauls parental control app for Switch, and this comes to us from Variety. An update to Nintendo's parental control mobile app added more options for parents this week, letting them limit the amount of time their child plays the console and the types of games they can play, Nintendo announced. With the app, parents can now choose how much child can play the Switch based on days of the week. So, for example, a kid may be permitted to play only 2 hours total on school nights and considerably longer on weekends. The app also tells parents if the Switch is being played outside of allotted times and allows games to be interrupted. These features can be changed or turned off using a PIN code used to set up the app. Additionally, parents can decide what games their children can play on the Switch using preset age categories or age-dependent custom options. This, too, can be overridden using the parent's in-app PIN number. You may also choose to whitelist specific games, excluding them from the parental control restrictions software setting. Nintendo added about the feature, To whitelist a game, the Switch needs to be updated to version 5.0.0 or later, and the app to 1.5.0 or later. Parents can also see what games their family plays the most with the app, as well as signing up for push notifications when new software is downloaded. Ooh, that's handy. Lastly, with the app, parents can choose how their kids use the Switch's internet features, making modifications such as limiting sharing of in-game texts or messages per game, and restricting the ability to post screenshots to the internet. Oh my god, I'm so happy about this.
I knew you would
like
that.
The only problem I really have with this is that I liked more actual, because parents can do this without even talking to their kids. It's like, you know, I'd rather some more interaction instead of, it's nice to have the app, it's nice they can control it a lot more stringently, you know, or at least more directly, but still, you know, it's sort of like, I'd like more interaction between the parent and
child. I'm sure there's plenty of interaction between the parent and child, but as being a kid, when I was a kid myself, I would try to sneak that game whenever my mom, you know, didn't realize it. So,
I can imagine
a kid getting up late at night, trying to put the volume all the way down and turn the lights off and cover the TV so she doesn't know that I'm playing. And, oh, wait, you got the parental controls, so now you can't play.
They might actually have to read a comic book or something.
Yeah.
Instead.
Yeah, I mean, like, me and my brother fucking spent most of the 90s or most of the early 90s at the PC trying to crack Leisure Suit Larry's Adult Protection.
Uh-huh.
And you turned out fine. Yeah. You know, the funny thing is that I was one of the few people who actually bought Leisure Suit Larry in the Land of the Lounge Lizards. According to the developer, Ron Gilbert, it's like he said, or in Al Lowe, it's like they said they sold like 15 copies and everything else was pirated. I was one of the people who bought it. Damn it, I feel like such a tool now.
We had the whole damn collection, including the infamous Leisure Suit Larry 4.
Not 6, because 6 was... What was the latest one that was really just embarrassing?
I think you missed the joke, Jonah.
I get it.
There
was one in which... Never mind.
So
not worth
there was
about.
There was a whole thing behind Leisure Suit Larry 4, for those who don't know. It's called Leisure Suit Larry, The Case of the Missing Floppies. Basically what happened was that that Al Lowe and his writers arrived at the end of Leisure Suit Larry 3, and they were like, Larry's life is perfect. He got everything he wanted. What do we do with this? And so they created the in-studio joke of Leisure Suit Larry 4, where apparently something terrible happens to him and he's back to square one at Leisure Suit Larry 5.
Hmm. So, Paul, now here's the thing. You always went on about, when you're a game designer, it's not my job to raise your kid. That's your job.
Absolutely, which is my immediate reaction as to why I said I was so happy to hear about these features, right? Because, like I said, thank you for, you know, pointing that out, to segueing, Jonah. As a game maker, it's not my responsibility to watch your child. I am not a babysitter. I am not here to impart morals and values onto your child, specifically if they don't agree with yours, right? As a parent, it's your job to monitor what your children are doing. It is your job to make sure that they are getting age-appropriate content. My job as a game maker is to give you the tools you need to make those decisions as a parent and as a consumer.
Go ahead, TJ. I know you're going to say something.
Responsibility sounds hard. Can't you just make all your products toothless so I don't have to worry about it?
No, because there are adults who need entertainment as well. All right, hey, some people want to see Mario and Peach get it on. As long as it has appropriate age rating on the outside of the box, then great.
Yeah, I just don't understand. Parents are be crying mature rated games because in order for the kids to play them, you have to buy it for them.
Yep. Well, I mean, then there's also like, oh, but my kid just bought something online and I didn't know that they were doing. Well, why did you allow it to be connected to the internet? Like, nothing that goes on in your house is outside of your control.
Forget that. How did the kid get your credit card? You know, I'd be more worried about how the kid got access to your credit card than him buying a game.
Yeah.
Anyways, so thumbs up from Paul.
Thumbs up from Paul.
Thumbs up from TJ too. This is good stuff for everybody. Like, I know that there's a lot of sneaky ways.
There's one actual parent here, actually. Scott.
Yeah, thumbs up from me too. I mean,
the actual parent of in the podcast. Yeah.
I'm glad they put this much focus and features for a parent to really customize how much they want to control their kid's gameplay. And I did notice that, like, on the 3DS, it would track your activity. So if you took your kid's 3DS, you could see their activity on there. And this is one step further, and I'm glad they're doing this.
Hey, wait, that reminds me. Hey, Paul, how's your Street Pass going?
Oh, my God. I don't even know where my 3DS is.
Well, how much of you see, I remember you at E3. It's sort of like Street Pass galore. And how are your puzzle pieces going?
I will probably bet money that the last time I used that was during that E3.
Really?
Yep.
At some point, I'm going to get myself a 3DS. And that means I'll have to start from Street Pass from scratch.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So, what were you about to say? I think it was Scott. Who did I interrupt? I don't think I interrupted anybody. Okay. So, we have listener feedback. And this is from Ralph from Germany. Hi, guys. Hello. Thanks, as always, for the... Thanks, as always, for the entertaining episode. Regarding PUBG, I like their approach to increase the performance, but they should have the player decide if he wants this or if he wants to play on a server of, quote-unquote, another country. And for the mobile version, the same as the Fortnite mobile game, just no. First-person shooters are PC-only games for me. I don't even play first-person shooters on console. I prefer mouse and keyboard, and for sure not on a 4-inch touchscreen. I've loved playing World of Warcraft, and we still play it with the next expansion, but fishing was gnar. I did it to get some special fish or some achievements, but not for fun. Hey, wait a minute. Now, you have to do a lot of fishing to get the special fishes. And you have to craft up to these special baubles, you know, that are nice and shiny for the ultimate fishes and all that stuff. And I enjoyed fishing. It was a nice way to take a break from the game, you know, from the other part of the game. You know, just sit around and try and get some multicolored fish.
I will say this. Fishing in Final Fantasy 15 was probably my favorite part of that game. Really? It was like a really relaxing breakaway from the story, and it was actually like a decent mini game in of itself with a plot line. It actually had a plot line to the fishing in Final Fantasy 15.
Usually the fishing is the most boring part in a game. People usually hate that.
Well, here's a question. Hey, Paul.
Yes?
Last we spoke to you, you were showing some misgivings about Final Fantasy 15. Have you actually played it?
No.
Okay.
It's good.
But
we don't like you don't like the effeminate boy band group? That's the main
game. No. I still haven't gotten around to it. But no, this is actually something that's like really important because it's an element of flow, right? A game has to ramp up the difficulty in accordance with the player's change in skill over time. So the extra activities, these little side bits, right, the fishing or the fetch quests, if something is too hard in the main plot line of the game, you should be able to go to these ancillary activities that help you power up so that you can get back to the thing that you used to be too hard for you.
Well, it wasn't that it was too hard. It's more like, I need to take a break from this hardcore stuff. Let me just relax and chill out and just fish. You know, and sometimes getting a second win, you know, just, okay, you know, it may be too hard because I'm concentrating too much and I'm just too tight. Let me just relax a bit before I even try again. Anyways. The fishing game for the Dreamcast, Sega Bass Fishing with the real fishing rod, was fun. I remember that. You remember that? The Sega Bass Fishing, you know, that controller that sort of looked like half of a dildo?
You're disgusting.
I don't remember the dildo part, but I remember the fishing rod controller.
Yeah. Well, it looked like, you know, it looked like a dildo with something sticking out of it.
Oh! Do you know what comes out today, Friday? Friday, April 20th?
Well, today is the 19th, but go ahead.
No, it's the 20th now. We just crossed over. It's midnight.
Well, not for you. Yeah, sure.
Oh, whatever.
It is. We're both in Florida. It's midnight.
Yeah, the Nintendo new cardboard thing.
Oh, Labo.
Oh, yeah. They had some news about that, too. The arts and crafts thing.
Oh, I'm so excited.
We'd love to discuss that with you another time, Paul.
Oh, I'm so excited. I want to go get it.
I want to see. Here's the thing. I don't want to discuss it. I don't want to discuss it on its release date. I'd rather talk about it like 3 months or 6 months after it's been released to see what the reaction was and if it's still going on.
Jonah hates it.
Scott loves
it. Well, that's like I've said before, today even, all of Jonah's taste is in his mouth.
Here's the thing, you know. It's... You know, did you hear where the ESRB, it wasn't the ESRB, it was the German rating company, almost threw out the thing from Nintendo because they thought it was trash? They almost didn't rate it because, oh, wait a minute, no, it's not trash. It's actually something we have to review.
It was a prototype.
For the ratings board. Yeah. And it wasn't because it was bad quality. It was just because it's this paper mask.
It's something new and interesting.
I'm going to go.
Yeah, new and interesting doesn't necessarily mean good, but we'll see. Like I said, I want to give it a few months.
This is Nintendo, right? They only do things if they know they're going to get like a 500% return on their investment.
You mean like the Virtual Boy?
Yes. Right? That's one of the reasons why they've.
The Power Glove?
That's one of the reasons why they've become so risk adverse.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. The only problem I have with it is that it's $80. Like I said, we'll see how if it catches on or not. I mean, you're right. You know, I know you're really disappointed about Toys to Life because that was something new.
Mm-hmm. Somebody was taking a risk.
It was a really good idea.
First,
too.
It was Activision with Skylanders, and everybody saw Skylanders and said, hey, wait a minute. People actually like this, and they're willing to spend money on these little figurines. Let's try it ourselves. And like I said, like Paul said, you know, it wasn't that Toys to Life was a bad idea. It's just they didn't know what to do.
It was poorly managed.
I'm going to go.
And you know, here's the thing. It's a good idea. I'm willing to bet you someone's going to try again and try and learn from their mistakes of before.
Yeah, it's going
to
be a while, though.
Yeah. All I know is that I'm gonna go by Home Depot, buy me a stack of cardboard boxes, slap Nintendo stickers on them, and sell them for $15 a pop.
You people are horrible, and you're all going straight to hell.
And then I'm gonna buy myself some Labo with that money.
Anyways, moving on with the letter. Thanks for infos on East. I think I'll give it a try. And you can thank Scott for that because he's the big East fan.
Yeah, it's apparently Lacrimosa of Dana has come out and it's gotten mixed reviews because apparently some people, despite the delay, they say that the port is still bad and still needs patchwork on it.
That's always the problem, right? Tales of Vesperia, was it?
Yeah.
There's a classic Tales of, but they botched the port really, really badly of that. And it was a free game, too, so it's sort of like, you know, it was a free buying with. Do you play the Tales of games, Scott?
I have, yeah, and it's I'm not having any problem with it, but I know others are disgruntled about it. It just seems lately there's just so many angry people about various video games and fandoms. And
what? There are angry video game fans on the internet?
There's a lot of them lately. It just feels like it's just can't you just enjoy something and?
No,
they can't.
No, they can't. They can't enjoy themselves. They're incapable of enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that facetiously. I mean that seriously. They're incapable of enjoying themselves. Right, Paul?
Yes.
At Jonah, a let's play of Mass Effect would be nice. A friend recommended me to the series, and I bought all the games, but I did not get into it so far. You know, when you say you bought all the games, I will say this. Buy the expansions. To me, Mass Effect is not whole unless you have all the story content.
I'm almost certain that there's a complete edition of the trilogy at this point, yeah?
Yeah.
No. What happens is the complete only has the complete stuff DLC for the first Mass Effect. You have to get 2 and 3's DLC separately.
Blah.
Which I'm still waiting for them to have the complete Mass Effect trilogy. And fuck my Mass Effect Andromeda. Although if they want to include that, if it means they'll also include all the DLC, then fine. And I don't know if I'm pissed off that they decided not to, they canceled their plans for DLC for Andromeda or not. I don't know if I'm happy or sad about that.
Be happy. I mean, make a
don't
choice.
Don't worry.
Be happy.
Don't worry. Don't worry. Be happy. Okay, the Easter off topic. We have Kinder Eggs in Germany. They're called Kid Surprise. Don't know if it's translated correctly. Yes, it is.
Yep.
Although, Paul, you speak German, right? No, you speak Russian.
Whatever made you think that I spoke either of those languages? I mean...
Because you're Eastern European.
Yes, yeah, so?
I'm German descent. I don't speak German.
That's racist.
Okay. No.
I'm of some Irish...
What does that have to do with race? That's nationalist.
I'm of some Irish descent, anyway. And I only know some Gaelic, so that's, yeah, offensive.
You know, I could be really racist and talk about, well, considering you're drinking.
Oh...
I mean, yeah. I'm not gonna say no.
Well, here's the thing. The thing about TJ is that he's not a drinker. He's more of a beer enthusiast. I've noticed. You know, he doesn't drink to get drunk. He just loves different types of beers.
It's true. I do.
Not everyone's an alcoholic like you, Jonah.
I
don't drink at all.
There's two. Like we've come to a time where there's as much variety of beer as there is food itself, and every one of them has a different flavor, and I like to try different things.
Let me ask you a question. Are you into the microbrewery thing, or are you just – or foreign beers?
I work at a microbrewery on the weekends.
Right.
So, yeah.
But anyways, yellow – go ahead. What were you about to say?
I was going
to
say, yes, I am into the microbrewery scene.
Okay. But the question is, when you go to a new area, is like you're gonna sniff out what the local beers are like?
You know, I didn't initially do that, but when I started working at a microbrewery, I started thinking to myself, I should check out what's in this area and see what they're doing with their stuff, because everybody does a little something different.
Yeah, because my close friend Brad, before he passed away, was into that, and we would be in a new state, he would immediately try and find out what the local breweries, local beers were like in Alaska. He was really excited to see what Alaskan beer was like. Anyways, the yellow plastic egg around the toy has changed. It's one part right now. Yeah, we do. You know, the thing is, the Kinder eggs were illegal in the United States because they were a choking hazard.
Yeah.
But
that was back before they changed it.
Yeah, and there's Kinder eggs in the supermarket for a while now. So, yeah. I think so that kids are not able to swallow part of it. Don't know. Never swallowed one as a kid and had a lot of them because my mom got me one every time she went shopping. Oh, that's sweet. And as you mentioned, April Fool, did you fall for one this year? No. You know, the thing is that April Fools fell on Easter this year, so guess what? There weren't many April Fools.
Yeah, it also fell on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Not just that it was a holiday, but it was just like, Sunday there are fewer people on the internet.
I'm sure Blizzard did one.
Yeah.
Blizzard always does one, but...
How are you supposed to slip cyanide into your coworker's coffee on a Sunday?
Exactly.
Just put some apple seeds in it.
Got you. You're going to die.
And then they die. I say, oh, wait, that wasn't supposed to happen.
So something like Michael Scott would do, put something in their drink and be like, it's totally hilarious. And then it's like, oh, wait, no, it's not.
So anyways, thanks for the listener feedback, Ralph.
Thank you, Ralph.
We don't get it, Muffin. Ralph has been doing a couple of them. I mean, We have some. It's not. We don't have the drought that we did when no one wrote in for like months and months and months. At least we have the occasional listener feedback now. Yeah. And for those of you out there, you know, I know you're out there because I know people download the episodes.
I know you're out there because I can hear you breathing.
Themselves. You know, you should write in. Say how much you hate Paul because that's what he wants. He wants hate. Do you still want hate?
Oh my God! I was just telling my students this today. That was a bit of mine.
But you wanted hate mail because it meant people cared about what you said.
Nobody seems to send Paul hate mail. I think everybody likes him too much.
I'm a rather amiable person.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. He's too busy sending hate mail to me for him to get any.
That sounds like a lie. But I'm really efficient with my hate mail, Jonah. I, you know, can send it all at once.
You know, the thing is that when he did demand it, people would send him faux hate mail and then just say we were just kidding. You just sent it because you wanted it.
And they sent him hate mail because
that's what he wanted.
It's not the same. So the story behind it is that if you're not upsetting somebody, you're not really doing anything worthwhile, right? You're not really taking a risk. You're not really doing anything unconventional. You're not doing anything controversial. So my line, for anybody who didn't know, was always that I will know I have achieved success when I start getting hate mail, because at least I'll have done something.
If the gauge for success is pissing people off, then damn, my career is on a skyrocket.
Okay, here's one. Even though I think he's a deplorable person, I really want to fuck Milo Yiannopoulos.
What? What? Jonah, you are a terrible person.
What can I say? He's a blonde bimbo. That's what he wants anyway. Well, no, I'm not rich enough for him. He's like the male version of Anna Nicole Smith, except with terrible politics.
He is the worst.
He's a blonde bimbo who is homeschooled. What can I say? So anyways, glad to have you back, Paul. It's, you know, we should have you more often, but we know,
God, I'm so busy.
Is never done.
I'm always so busy. Yeah. Like, oh, that's why we're recording the show at midnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I know that the Gamertag Radio is up to 724, I think. Not many podcasts make it to 500. And the funny thing is that I was not on this podcast until 200, so I've been on for 300 of this one. And I mean, I was a long-time listener and sometime contributor for the podcast. It's not like I was totally divorced from it for 200 episodes, but I was brought on as an official co-host on 200. And, you know, I've kept it going, 300 more. And the regular video game roundtable is at 333. At some point, it's going to reach 400.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, and I know Paul, I mean, TJ's had fun on it, and Scott has had fun on it. I hope they have. I mean, maybe they've been lying to me all this time.
We've had fun.
Maybe they're like Paul and they actually hate it.
No, I just hate you, Jenna.
Okay.
Aww.
So, TJ, how have you... damn it, I worded that wrong. Damn it. So, TJ, tell us about your experience with gaming podcasts and the time that you've been with us.
You and I worked at Game Watcher, and one day you told me to come on your show. The end.
No, that's not what I was asking. I was asking what your experience has been like.
Oh.
Not how did you get on the show.
And I'm still doing it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So
I'm just kidding. But I like these discussions. It gives me time to sort of vent my mind on certain like things that otherwise I wouldn't really have anyone to talk. Like working as a freelance writer, I have plenty of colleagues to talk to, but I don't necessarily have anyone to do like water cooler chat with about this stuff. My wife can only take so much of my constant ranting. So this is a good place to vent.
Yeah. And also we finally got to meet last E3 and it was nice.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you had work to do, but my favorite moment was introducing you to the creator of Rainbow Six Siege and just watching your eyes widen, meeting him.
I finally used that card. We did an interview with that guy and put it on the website.
Yeah, but I just you saying I've been playing your game since day one, and he was surprised too because remember Rainbow Six Siege didn't actually have the best launch.
No, I had a terrible launch.
So it's like you were one of the people who slogged through the troubled times of the early release of that game.
Mm-hmm. You should have given me a pat on the back and a shake of my hand for that.
He did.
I don't remember.
Well, he gave you a virtual pat on the back, but, you know. Scott, basically, I just did Turncast with him on Dan's Civ site.
I've been enjoying the show because I get to talk about all these video game stories and news items, and again, kind of like TJ, I don't have as many people to really water cooler chat about it and just go off on crazy tangents and just have all these really fun discussions and even insightful ones, and sometimes get different perspectives on these things. But it's been really interesting and fun.
Yeah, and by the way, Dan was the one who suggested Scott to me.
Mm-hmm. Very nice of him.
And Dan is no longer with the podcast, but, you know, as a matter of fact, I'm doing the Turncast this Saturday. Not the Turncast, I mean the Polycast. Mm-hmm. The Turncast is when you actually play Civ. The Polycast is just discussing Civ. So, yeah, I mean, it was just two Civ. I'm a Civ guy, Scott's a Civ guy, so I said, you know, come on. We're not going to talk about Civ much, but... Although we have, actually. You know, one of the games I considered doing as a gaming flashback was Civilization Revolution. So, and Paul. Paul, when did you join? You joined the podcast.
Oh, God,
really
I don't
early.
Even remember.
Episode 94. Yeah.
Somewhere less than 100, I think.
I don't remember how we... Oh, wait, no, I asked for anybody want to do a podcast. You said, sure.
Yeah, we were in the same Facebook group.
Yeah, and you know what? It was a delightful surprise.
Because now, I'm a delightful person.
For all the snarking that Paul does, we actually get along extremely well. So I won't say it's like a married couple, but it's more like two friends who know that no matter what we say, we're not gonna be offended, and we're not gonna be, well, obviously we can offend each other if we really wanted to. But we can snark and make fun, and the other one will know, it's just part of the fun of doing something together. It's unfortunate Paul burned out. Well, I won't say, Paul, did you burn out, or you just feel like you needed to do something new?
I just needed to do something new. All good things must come to an end.
Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, he still enjoys it enough that he comes and does these little guest hosting things. And, you know.
And then it becomes a very special episode of Video Game
Roundtable. That's right.
And to stroke Paul's ego, you know, we do get a download bump every time he comes on.
Oh, yay.
So people like Paul, even though he wants them to send him to hate mail. So anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with the history news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net, like Ralph did. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave some iTunes comments. And I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
Is it me? I'm at Johnny Chugs.
Yes,
I'm at Johnny Chugs.
And I'm at Alpha Shard.
And I don't tweet.
Yeah. Did you ever have Stager Monkey as your Twitter?
Probably, but I don't open, like, there would be no point. I mean, come visit my website at partlywicked.com.
Yep, partlywicked.com. And if Dan were here, I would say go to
thepolycast.net.
Is it Polycast?
Thepolycast.net.
Okay. Yeah. Does Apolliton still work? Is this Apolliton still around? No.
Apolliton, I think it is still around. He's just not a part of it.
Oh, okay. So you can also find TJ Denzer. Maybe, are you still writing at Game Watcher?
No, I am primarily at Twin Galaxies Editorial now, where we're covering mostly esports events, organization, speedruns, record setting, all that jazz. If it has to do with players, we're all about it.
Yeah, and this is the first news item that actually directly referenced Twin Galaxies, because this is, you know, a lot of people. I mean, here's the thing. Notice where this news item came from. It came from Variety. And Variety is a major Hollywood trade magazine. So it actually transcended. I mean, major part of it is because it was part of a documentary, you know, but still. You know, so we're still trying to get to that level, you know, in which Variety starts noticing more and more video game stuff. Anyways, we will see you next week. Unfortunately, Paul will probably not be next week, but he's always welcome here. And, you know, the fans want you, Paul.
I know.
But, you know, he's a teacher now.
I have responsibilities. I'm changing the world one designer at a time.
Do you ever give him the quote, a bad game. What's it called? A good game.
Oh, yes. You have no idea. Right? A late game is only late until it comes out. Bad game is bad forever.
Yeah, and that's Shigeru Miyamoto?
That was me.
Is that Miyamoto's
No, that was me.
Oh, okay. Anyway, you know, I wish everybody would listen to that quote. You know, every time I hear news about a game being delayed, it's like, okay, I can wait. You know, take your time. You heard me, Obsidian. Take your time. Hey, hear that, Peter Molyneux? Take your time.
Ah, yes. That famous Miyamoto quote, anime was a mistake.
Anyways, we will see you next week, except for Paul.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Play games, have fun. Don't be hateful each other. Love is the best strength.
You want that t-shirt, don't you?
Buy bonds. It's good advice, still.
Excuse me.
I'm glad I recorded that. Paul's awful burp for everybody to hear.
I have outtakes now.
You know what I'm going to do?
I've had 12 cans of soda since class started today at 5.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take that burp and I'm going to slow it down and deepen it to see what kind of sound effect I can make with it.
You're disgusting.
Yes.
Oh, that's nothing. Paul, do you remember when I made that theme song when it was just the two of us? I made it deliberately bad. It was like fingernails on the blackboard for you.
I've blocked out much of this show.
I recorded it just here, Paul. Here's our new theme song. And I had made multiple voiced myself, so I kept on recording myself over and over again, but in the flattest, driest tone as possible.
So it's like, oh, I'm not gonna say it because we're friends.
My favorite pony is still cheese sandwich.
Aww.
And I didn't even know that was Weird Al. I didn't even know it.
Why on? Did cheese sandwich die or something?
No, it's just because it's an example of Jonah's terrible taste in all things, but you know.
Oh, you don't like cheese sandwich?
I mean, he's only been in like one or two episodes.
Yeah, I will say this though: I didn't know John DeLancey did that show.
Oh yeah,
he's hilarious.
Oh yeah, I've actually been watching all of Star Trek Voyager starting like Friday.
Oh okay.
And it's like, oh my god, it's the same character.
My favorite episode of Star Trek Voyager is, of course, Oblivion.
Which one's that? What happens?
That's the one in which the demon class, you know, ship. What's it called? Find out they're actually demon-class aliens, and they try to get back to that mine, but at the end, they just evaporate, and the Voyager passes them by, and they didn't even know they were there. And people all say it's a depressing episode, but I always say, well, listen, wait a minute. Did you not watch
that's like that's like the second or third episode.
No. It's later in the season. And the thing is, did you not watch the episode? They helped people along the way, so, you know, they were helping people, even though they all vanished at the end. No one knew what happened to them. There are still a lot of people who benefited from them.
Oh, there's one episode. I think it's like the second or third episode.
Oh.
Where they stop to investigate a planet that has exploded and like their entire civilization is dead.
Yeah.
And Janeway gets thrown back in time to before the explosion, and they realize that the ship's attempts to rescue them are actually what caused the explosion.
Double paradox there.
Yeah, so temporal paradox. And so she figures it out right before it happens a second time. And the episode concludes with them completely passing by the planet because there was no reason to stop.
Yeah. You know, the one episode...
That's fun.
The one episode that makes me want to punch Janeway in the face is the one with Tuvix.
Oh, I hate that one. I saw it the other day. Why do you want to punch her?
Because it's a painful episode,
but I think Janeway doesn't let herself off the hook there just because she does that decision. Because when she comes out of that room, she looks very heartbroken.
No, she wasn't heartbroken. Judging from the actions Janeway does, no, she... You know, here's the reason why the Tuvix had to go, because Ethan Phillips and Tim Russ have contracts.
Oh, obviously, yes.
Yeah.
I much prefer Tuvix.
But at least it shows us an example of Janeway's character in that she realizes that she has to sometimes do these things themselves, right? She can't just delegate
every unpopular decision, right?
So if she has a decision, that at least, you know, she has to be willing to physically carry it out herself.
Well, here's the question. What if she did it and it didn't work? There was no guarantee that it was going to work.
Fair enough, but...
There's often not that many guarantees in life to begin with, so...
The Prime Directive is really about not screwing with what is supposed to be, right? And...
Yeah.
Tuvix wasn't supposed to be.
Says who? What's it called? That's for civilization. Anyway, you know what episode did that moral thing better? Was Children of Time. That's DS9, though.
Yeah,
that's my favorite. That's my favorite. I don't know. It's a very bleak episode, too, but at least it gave Odo some character. Anyways, we're getting way off this, so we're going to start this episode now. This is not the Star Trek. You see, here's the thing. We were supposed to discuss Skin of Evil at some point, damn it.
I watched that episode and everything.
What the hell is Skin of Evil?
That's the one in which Tasha Yar died.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah.
It was boring.
Really?
And they kept bringing her back for stupid reasons and in really stupid ways.
Well, no. The first time they brought her back made sense. That was not cause and effect. It was called something.
Yesterday's Enterprise.
Then bringing her back as Sela, that was stupid. And you know they should have had her in Nemesis. I would have liked Nemesis a lot better if that Romulan woman was actually Sela. And it would have made sense because she says keep those pretty eyes elsewhere. Tasha has blue eyes, so Sela has the same blue eyes.
I watched that episode for the first and only time in my conscious life, and all I can think about at the end where she gives that speech, her own eulogy, is like, wow, she had some very specific things for all these characters, and everybody else that she didn't mention must feel like an asshole.
Well, you know, that's fair because those are the main crew, you know? It's not like Lower Decks. And the thing is that, you know, she probably did make multiple eulogies. What the sad thing is that, you know what? You have to realize that since she's a security officer, she probably records that thing every few months.
I'm not in on the implied eulogy theory.
Well, she's a security officer. She expects to die on duty. So she probably records that thing every few months.
That I'd buy.
You know? Anyway.
She just keeps updating it.
Yeah. Well, you do have to update your will, too, you know, in real life.
Yeah.
Who made it onto her top 10 eulogies this week?
Oh, wow, yeah.
I wonder if she saves the old eulogies. It's like...
Just copy and paste and just add new people?
Oh, no, it's more like, you know...
She's not going to put me in her eulogy.
I'm willing to bet her eulogy was a lot different before she boinked Data.
I think she didn't make a lot of friends, you know? She came from a planet where she was constantly raped, so it's really hard for somebody to let others in.
You know what the worst part was? Is that Denise Crosby said if they had done the same, the kind of opening that they did for that episode, she would have stayed on. You know, when she and Worf are discussing the upcoming, matches.
Mm-hmm.
She said if we had more scenes like that in that show, I would have stayed.
Wait, it was her decision to leave?
Yeah, she wanted to leave. She told Gene that she wanted to go, and Gene's like, well, if you feel like you have to, then go ahead. So she wanted to go.
And Gene mandated that if a security officer dies, it should be something on the line of duty and kind of senseless.
And she mm-hmm. never got replaced either, so...
No, well, Worf replaced her. I mean, her character wasn't replaced.
No, I mean, like, they never hired a new character to have the same number of cast members.
Well, here's the thing, though. You know, Worf had nothing to do except be the Klingon. That's all he did. At least her death gave him something to do.
Yeah.
It's true.
And, you know, and then she went on to Pet Sematary.
So why did she leave? Because there wasn't anything meaningful about the show?
The show wasn't doing well, and you know, here's the thing about Gene Roddenberry. He said that
she didn't have enough to do. She felt like her character wasn't being focused on enough.
The thing is that Gene Roddenberry said that it's the future, no one has interpersonal conflicts. And the writers said, well, you're taking away all the drama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after Gene Roddenberry died, you notice that a lot of them started getting into it with each other. Like Picard chewing out Wesley for doing that stupid stunt show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Story is conflict.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anyways, let's start this episode. You know, this is really fascinating. We could talk for hours on this. By the way, I have to ask.
No, I'd really rather not.
Paul, just wondering, are you keeping up with Doctor Who?
No, I don't even have BBC anymore.
Oh, see, that's what I was wondering, because you, Jordan, and Jennifer used to have these wonderful little special episodes talking about the year in Doctor Who.
Yeah, and I only watch it now for whenever it's been on Netflix. I don't even know when it updates on Netflix anymore. Mm. Or if it even still does.
And then we have to listen to Paul's ode to Rose.
Oh, Rose. Yeah, I've gotten over her.
Oh.
Yeah, I've gotten over her.
I mean, it's just, you know, something that I liked 10 years ago.
Oh, it's been that long?
Yeah.
By the way, Paul, just so you know, of the regular characters, my favorite pony is Apple Blossom.
Oh, the
daughter. Cutie Mark Crusader? I mean, her sister. Her little sister, yeah.
Like I said, all your taste is in your mouth.
What? You don't like Apple Blossom?
I hate the Cutie Mark Crusaders. Whenever it's their episode, I want to kill myself.
Okay, well, here's the thing. Of the main six, I like her older sister best.
Yeah, I like Applejack.
Paul, don't kill yourself over the little ponies. People will laugh.
But the reason why I like...
Yeah, right? It's a really silly way. Really silly reason to kill myself.
I don't like the Cutie Mark Crusaders, but I do like Apple Blossom. She's like... She's the one who pulls back Applejack when she's acting weird.